Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Raucous Caucus. I am Mark Levine. I am here with
Terry D. Kester
and
Garland Nixon,
and we're all together. And I think we're all kind of upset right now. You know, it's been the week or couple weeks of scandal. I got to tell you, the Republicans are happier than I've seen them in a long time. Even though their approval rating is down in the low 30s, and even though they really have no agenda at all, they say repeatedly that this is their chance to obstruct Obama's agenda. They can't do it on the merits. They can't get any agreement with them on things like background checks for guns or immigration, because those are things where the American people support Obama's agenda. But these scandals, IRS and AP and the Fox News reporter that they've been following, and Benghazi, who knows what, this is their chance. And Garland and I were talking just last night. Two nights ago, I appeared on CNBC trying to talk about some of these scandals, and didn't get much reward in edgewise. So here is our chance to speak back. Garland, repeat to our listeners some of what you were telling me Friday night.
Well, basically what I said was, I said, I think this is basically all fake scandals. They put together a bunch of stuff. And what's unfortunate is that people are buying into the fact that these are scandals simply because they say it's a scandal so many times. That people start to believe it, because most Americans don't look into it. They don't look at what's going on. As an example that we discussed, just one example, they're now claiming that Attorney General Holder perjured himself. So when the claim is that what he said in front of Congress, that he was not part of nor approved prosecution of any journalist.
Right.
Now they have said, but we have found out that he did approve the investigators asking for their records, going to get their records.
Right, monitoring. It's like people don't know the difference between an arrest warrant and a search warrant, and they're different things.
Right, so these are the kind of things they're doing. They're taking two things that, while there is a commonality, and they were both part of the, one is part of the investigation and one is part of the prosecution, they are not the same. It can't possibly be perjury if we're talking about two different things. But they've said it so many times, a lie repeated so often, and Americans who never read the paper, who never go online, well, God forbid they read the paper, who never go online, who never research any of this stuff themselves, they just say, oh, well, it must be a scandal. How do you know? Because I heard it on all three news channels.
But I got to tell you, some on the left are concerned as well, and I think, Terry, you're one of them.
Well, I'm concerned about a number of things, Mark.
You're always concerned.
I wake up concerned. I go to sleep concerned. When I think of you guys, I'm concerned.
And we think of you, we're concerned. So.
I should hope so, by golly, because I'm concerned that you're concerned that I'm concerned. Anyway, Karl Rove is the Albert Speer of America. You know, let me put it bluntly. You know, and the Tea Party are the brown shirts, and I almost mean that seriously. You know, the scandals, there's some concerns within some of the scandals, I will give that, what they call scandals. Are they scandals? No. Are they administrative problems? Maybe. Are there some lapses that happened? Maybe. You know, but the level that it's taken to is pure vengeful politics. And you're exactly right, and I think our listeners know it. There's one purpose behind it, and only one purpose, and that is to destroy everything they can in the social network that has been built over the decades that Obama has been trying to extend and provide for the common people. And it's a tragedy. And the biggest problem is the media.
Well, and that's actually what I was going to get to, because I was on CNBC Friday night, I was there to talk about the IRS scandal. So the first thing they do is they throw me a loop and say, did Holder commit perjury? And I'm thinking to myself, perjury? What did he say? What are you accusing him of lying about? I don't remember him even talking about the IRS scandal. It turns out they're doing what Garland just talked about. They're claiming that somehow saying he's not going to prosecute a reporter means that he's not going to do a search warrant for a reporter. And we can argue over whether or not the search warrant was appropriate. I think that's a fair question, whether or not it was appropriate. I'm leaning toward the fact that it was, but I can be convinced, and certainly civil libertarians are opposed to it. But that's very, very different from this kind of high-in-the-sky rhetoric that somehow the Attorney General of the United States has committed perjury. You may disagree with his decision, and that's fair. That's fair game. But it's this kind of, now they're talking impeachment, they're talking Nixonian. I was on TV Friday with a guy who mentioned Nixon, Stalin, and Hitler all in one breath, and I'm thinking, you can disagree with the way that the Attorney General is prosecuting this case, but I just don't think concentration camps are opening around the corner, and I know he doesn't think so either, and my question, I guess, is who are they fooling, because they know that this isn't true. One last thing, I was talking to a friend afterwards when we finally moved on to the IRS and they didn't give me a real chance to respond. And the friend said, why is Kudlow doing this? I don't understand. I mean, he must know it's not true. And then I played for him a little bit later on in the same broadcast where Kudlow says, I don't know how this is going to end. I want an independent counsel. But even if Congress asks a lot of questions, this could go on for years. That'll be good for the Republicans. That should disrupt Obama's agenda. And I thought, wow, he's openly admitting it. I thought they talked about these things behind closed doors. He's openly admitting the purpose of the scandal is to disrupt the Obama agenda.
And this is what frightens me the most in this whole situation in the last few years of politics, as a matter of fact, is the blatancy of their goals and their ambitions. I mean, they are deliberately trying to tear things apart. They are deliberately serving private industry and private wealth. And they're blatant about it, and they make no apologies about it. They disguise it occasionally in other words, but they are blatant about it. That's a dangerous sign. It's not unlike the McCarthy era, where all you had to do was mention communist and in any context whatsoever, and by golly, people were arrested, drawn before Congress, careers ruined, et cetera, et cetera. The defense the people had was the Fifth Amendment because the situation was so totally out of control. And we're in a very similar situation, and the right always in these situations can make the most out of these, the chaos, the confusion, and the tension that's in society today, to, literally destroy government, to dissemble government. And that's really what they're trying to do. They're fighting for their own personal power. I mean that personal power. They have one goal, and that's their personal power. The media will go right along with them because media is now totally commercial. It's worse than when single individuals owned newspapers. And they will distort anything in any event to give themselves power, wealth, and inside connections. And
here's the other
really
thing.
Seeing the dirty side of it.
Guys, I'm here. Actually, I have a little bit of an emergency come up. I'm going to have to leave. I can make a couple comments real quick.
Okay, go ahead.
Two things. Number one, as far as the media and the AP so-called scandal, and not to mention the latest, the Fox News, so-called Fox News scandal, of all companies, News Corp, Fox News, a company who hacked into the cell phones.
Right.
Of a missing girl who hacked into the cell phones of politicians, hacked into the cell phones of actors and of innocent people, are absolutely astounded by the fact that someone may have in the course of an investigation actually looked into some of the things that they were doing. How hypocritical is that? Number one. Number two. My opinion is this: the government, the media. Saying that the government is snooping on them or the government is doing them dirty is the equivalent of a dog biting the hand that feeds it, because every time there's a war, anytime there's something that the government wants to do that the people are against, such as go after Social Security, whatever, you don't see the media opposing it. The media stands for the top 1% in the corporatocracy and oligarchy in America. I'm not going to be one to join in and say, oh, the poor media, they've been done so dirty, when the fact of the matter is they are not on our side. But unfortunately, I got to run, guys. I know you got to do a family.
All right.
But I will be in touch.
We will miss you, Garland. But that's
right.
Okay. Terry and I have plenty to talk about. So here's the thing. I mean, I am sympathetic, and I believe in the Constitution. I believe in the First Amendment. I certainly believe in a free press. And when I think of the days of Watergate, I mean, there's some really wonderful things the press has done, reporting on Vietnam, the Pentagon Papers. One of the things I want to clarify is the difference between what I consider to be reporting whistleblowing when someone in the government is letting us know about something going on that is secret and unlawful or unethical or violates, hypocritical perhaps, or violates what the president says. That I think is very worthwhile and needs to be reported. When it comes to this James Rosen story, and I want to talk a little bit about the facts about it, I think that may err on the other side. There's the whistleblowing, those are the good guys, and then there's the people I call, well, for lack of a better word, the traitors. The people who are actually notifying the public about spies that we have that are doing what we want them to do, and what there's really no complaint about. Let me just talk about the two examples that Obama's been accused of. In one case, we had a secret operative in Yemen who had managed to infiltrate into Al-Qaeda, perhaps America's greatest enemy, to determine that they were developing a new underwear bomb that doesn't have any metal in it, that somebody was going to go on a plane, a suicide bomber, and kill hundreds of people. Now, and then the other case was North Korea, where we have an operative up in a government that has literally threatened to nuke the United States. There are not many governments that literally threaten to nuke the United States. Even Russia and China don't say we're going to nuke the United States, right? I mean, and he's building the missiles to do it. We have a secret operative in there, and James Rosen is disclosing that we have that operative. Now, the Obama administration has never gone after the AP or James Rosen to prosecute them. They're going after the leaker, the person in the government that tells them things. And apparently there's this guy, Kim, in the State Department who disclosed about our operative up in North Korea. And I got to say this. To me, Kim and whoever disclosed the AP, the operative in Yemen, these aren't heroes. These aren't whistleblowers. This isn't someone saying, hey, the government's torturing people, which is illegal, or the EPA is allowing sludge to go in the river, which they shouldn't be doing. They aren't reporting government misconduct. They're reporting appropriate government conduct. I don't know any American. I'd venture 99% of us support spying Al-Qaeda and support spying on North Korea. These aren't things that we have a disagreement about in America. These aren't things that are illegal or that anyone thinks are unwise. In fact, they're good things. And when you report on those kinds of things, you put our operatives in danger. And more importantly, you disrupt the knowledge we have from either Al-Qaeda or North Korea. So I want to make that big distinction between whistleblowers and traitors. And I don't think it's that hard a line to draw sometimes.
Well, you're pointing out to a lot of important aspects here, Mark. And somehow or other, you know, we have this unrealistic view of politics and government to begin with. We have the mythological view that's taught in the schools that, you know, government is this wonderful, noble, beautiful thing.
Who teaches that? I don't remember anyone teaching that.
That's in first grade. Second grade, they get on to Carl.
I remember the bill on Capitol Hill, Schoolhouse Rock, and I felt for him. And now I learned that, that never happens that way. It's
right. No. You know, we have a mythology about politics, and that somehow there it can be noble and, above board and serve the people and all of that. And it happens by circumstance occasionally. It happens when society really needs it in a democracy, or what's left of our democracy anyway. But in general, politics is adversarial. It is brutal. And it always has been, and it always will be. And the real question that we have to look at, which is a very big question and a difficult question, is how do we balance these things? The one thing that's assured, there's one aspect that's absolutely assured, is when you concentrate power, and by that I mean the 1%, when you concentrate power in a society, in any society, the demagoguery, the manipulation, the false accusations, the secrecy, all of these plagues that undermine democracy really, really begin to grow. And we're seeing the result of our fractured society. This is symptomatic of what's wrong with our society. And people have got to realize that. There are forces, there are individuals, there are people that are so attached to their wealth, to their power, to their elitism, to their believed-in superiority, and I hate to say it, but they're primarily white Americans. They're primarily the super rich. They will do anything, and I do mean anything, to protect and advance their power.
Well, we've seen that.
We've got to counteract that.
We've seen that, of course. The heart of what the IRS case is about is the fact that people, mostly conservatives, mostly Republicans, most of the people that you're talking about, people like the Koch brothers, people like Karl Rove, wanted to put in millions, indeed billions of dollars into our political system and anonymously.
Yep,
that's what they wanted to do. Now, this, by the way, is new. It should be pointed out that this kind of thing is new. You might remember, I know you do, back to 2004, the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth. All right. Now, I hated that group. It was clearly designed to take down John Kerry. Mm-hmm. But there's one and only one nice thing I can say about the Swift Boat Veterans for Truth. It was organized under Section 527 of the IRS Code, which meant that its donors were public. We had a right to know who those people were. And I didn't like those people, but we knew their names, we knew where they came from, and we knew, in fact, that they were biased because of where they came from, and that let us discount their message. And that, by the way, has been the law for like 100 years in America. If you give to a political campaign, if you give more than $200, that's the limit today, you might know, you might remember, they ask you for your name. If you've given that much, they ask you for your name, they ask you for your job, they have a right to know who you are. It can't be anonymous. The reason they do that is because we want to know who's funding our political system. I want to know if Al-Qaeda or the North Korean dictator is donating funds to this political candidate. I'm not going to wonder who that political candidate's standing for. But this what they've done now is they've taken a code section that's actually been in the Internal Revenue Code for 100 years. And that's the Section 501c4. I looked it up. This section is as old as the 16th Amendment to the Constitution, which allows us to do federal income taxes, which, by the way, celebrates its 100th anniversary this year. I don't know, Terry, if you plan to go any tax celebration parties. I haven't heard of any. It's the centennial. Well, it's the centennial of the federal income tax, and I don't know why we're not seeing parties to celebrate its 100th anniversary. But I digress. Anyway, this statute has been around ever since 1913, ever since we've been taking federal income taxes. And it says that if you have money, if you have an organization set up exclusively, that's the word in the code, exclusively for social welfare, then the funds can be anonymous. And there are examples in the code: beautifying a park, building a school, feeding the hungry, even building a stadium. We can argue over whether that's social welfare or not. But these are clearly public benefit type things. And I guess the reason they allow those to be anonymous is because sometimes people want to build a school anonymously or beautify a park or things like that. And frankly, if Kim Jong-un or you know, the leader of Al-Qaeda puts money in to beautify my park, I just don't see really the damage. I don't see any corruption of our political system. You know, we could take their anonymous money. If the Koch brothers want to build a school, a public school, you know, I they probably don't. But if they did, I wouldn't complain about the anonymous money. So this code section makes a lot of sense for 100 years.
There's a reality here we're ignoring, and that is...
Well, they're abusing the code section is, of course, what I'm going to get to.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
The section, the literal interpretation or the actual interpretation or statement of the code, you know, just simply has not been enforced. I mean, at least according to what I've read in the Christian Science Monitor and the New York Times, the government has been lax on that, has not paid.
Well, let me tell you why, Terry, just real quick. So what they've done is they've taken the language of the code, 100-year language that says that your organizations have to be exclusively for social welfare. And they've interpreted it, the IRS has, for decades now, interpreted it to mean primarily not involved in politics. And then the question is, what's primarily? Well, 51% perhaps. So you have these organizations that are coming in and they're doing all these things. And people like Crossroads, GPS is a 501c4. That's Karl Rove's organization. I don't believe that Karl Rove is developing an organization that's funneling millions of dollars into political campaigns that's primarily not for politics. I just don't believe it. But it's approved under 501c4. And the poor hapless agents in Cincinnati, their problem was, and the reason why they wanted so much information, was because they couldn't tell whether the Tea Party is primarily political or not. I got news for you. The Tea Party is as political as the Democratic Party or the Republican Party. That's not rocket science.
And, you know, I mean, and because of what you said, you know, this brings up the big question is how should, and this is a real question that's important to me, is how is the Obama administration going to respond to this, and how should they respond to it? And the key, I think, is blatant transparency. by on the Obama side. This is going to be a, this contest, this war is going to go on for a while. It's not going to disappear. It's got legs. You know, it's going to continue. The investigations are going to continue. The Republicans are going to make the most out of it. The Democrats have to come back with the progressives, and Obama have to come back with some strategy. And to me, that strategy is exactly what they're talking about. They've got to name names. They've got to call out. They got to sit there in front of a congressional hearing being abused by a congressman or a senator, and when asked, you know, how dare somebody, you know, limit what a Tea Party can do, and the response has to be, well, all we were trying to do, all the IRS is trying to do is determine how much money Karl Rove is putting into this.
Right,
situation.
Which, that's the law. They're trying to enforce the law. And
yeah.
If you don't like the law, change the law. But see, the thing about it is, and this is fascinating, I'm one of the few people, I think, in Washington that actually read the Inspector General's report.
Sure I'm sure very few have.
There's this bespectacled guy, J. Russell George. He's appointed by George W. Bush. He's a Republican, but he's kind of a low-key, mild-mannered Republican. He worked for Bush Sr. He worked for Republicans in the Senate and the House. And he puts out this report. And the report details some of the mistakes that were made by the IRS and makes clear that there was absolutely no political involvement, that they didn't do it for political reasons, that they did it because they had trouble basically implementing this statute, which is very confusing because it's very hard to know whether something's political or not. And frankly, I think the answer is he wasn't hard enough on the organizations, because I think, you know, even the report says, this is what's fascinating, the report says that 82% of the groups that called themselves Tea Party or 912 or Patriot, the groups that we said that they were targeting, 82%, according to the report, were properly targeted. In other words, they were significantly involved in political campaigning. So the 82% of the Tea Party was should have been targeted, and he targeted 100%, and eventually they let the other 18% go. Interestingly, of the non-Tea Party organizations, 7% were involved in political activity, and some of those were targeted. In fact, Emerge America, which seeks to elect Democratic women, was turned down. In fact, was the only one that was turned down, a progressive organization, because it was involved in political campaigns. Now, that was proper to turn them down, just like it was proper to turn down 82% of the Tea Party. But, you know, the fact that if 82% of a barrel of apples is rotten, you're going to look at that barrel pretty carefully, even for the good apples. And yeah. I don't see why this is such a huge scandal.
It's a huge scandal because it can be used. And
exactly.
We talked about that.
Exactly.
The only purpose of it.
There exactly.
Is no,
the facts, you know, themselves do not warrant this. You know, it warrants,
no.
You know, slapping the hand of the people that made some mistakes and fixing the problem. But this is not a political scandal. It doesn't even touch Obama. Obama didn't even know about it.
Well, and, you know, but then they go into that. I mean, perception is everything in politics. And the more media is involved in showmanship, as what it comes down to, the more media is involved in showmanship, the more important perception becomes. So if you can find one fly in the room that's pooping in your salad, you can make that a federal issue against salads, you know,
right,
against
right.
Poop, against anything you want, if you play it up big enough, and particularly when you start the hyperbole on the media saying, well, this is like Watergate, or this is a constitutional crisis, which is a total distortion of what has happened in any comparison, on any comparative level. But once you start that perceptive game in our society today, and with the way media plays to that media panders, frankly, to whatever is going on, facts be damned, context be damned, reality be damned, perception is everything. And if you can smear enough, you can literally destroy careers, you can destroy social programs. One of the most, let me give you one example, something that I was not aware of. It is a small example, but it shows you what's going on in our society today. We know that private industry has an enormous power in writing legislation. In fact, an awful lot of legislation is in fact written by private industry, supposedly consulted, supposedly lobbyists just helping them understand, but they actually write what it is.
Yes, they do.
What the lawyers and lobbyists know is all they have to do to destroy legislation from having any effect on them whatsoever is just put in a few terms that they know can be legally parsed later on with a lawsuit. They will actually pretend that they are giving legislation and convincing the congressmen and the aides and everything else that they're helping support legislation, say it's on pollution or whatever, and just insert a few terms that they know later on they can go to court and on the basis of that term sue to prevent the legislation from happening. I mean, I know that sounds a little complex, but it's actually very simple if you think about it. And by just doing that simple little tactic, they can prevent government from doing anything they want to prevent government from doing. And we've reached that stage where that's happening on a major level. This kind of distortion of reality is now a product. It's a commodity. And it's used to subvert any kind of good social progress.
Well, the Democrats are now in a bind. Because politically, they're in a political bind. And they're doing what Democrats seem to always do when they're accused of something wrong and it's overstated. Rather than say, you're way overstating the case, you've made a mountain out of a molehill, there's this tiny problem we're going to fix, but all the rest of this is ridiculous, which I firmly believe to be the truth. What they do is they decide, you know what, politically we're going to get out front on this. We're going to beat our breasts and rent our hearts and we're going to say we did wrong. And so what does Obama do? He fires the acting commissioner of the IRS. Now, think about how wonderfully Orwellian this is. So, yeah. So George, under George Bush's commissioner, who's Don Shulman, okay? He's Bush's guy. And under his direction, of course, he didn't know about it either, but under his direction, some employees in Cincinnati decide, well, if 82% of these, all these Tea Party things are coming in, they're all political, the vast majority of them are political, we're going to give them special scrutiny. So they give all the Tea Party people special scrutiny, which, again, to me seems just like I said, you got a barrel of apples, and if 82% of one barrel's rotten, you're going to give the entire barrel special scrutiny. That doesn't seem very weird to me. Anyway, they decide to do it. They're told by Lois Lerner that they're wrong, that they have to, you know, examine each one individually. Don't give sort of anybody special scrutiny. And it's fixed. And it's all done under the apparent aegis of this Bush appointee, the IRS commissioner, Don Shulman, who apparently doesn't even find out about it until after it's fixed. Okay, that happens way back in 2011. Now, The Bush commissioner is done. His term's over in November 2012. Congress, the Republican Congress, doing what the Republican Congress has been doing for 4 years, purposely trying to obstruct any kind of government action by President Obama, refuses to let him appoint a new IRS commissioner. I guess we shouldn't be surprised by that. They refuse to let him appoint judges. They refuse to let him appoint members of the National Labor Relations Board. They refuse to let him appoint Secretary of State Susan Rice. Anyway, they're obstructing government. So you've got this acting commissioner, this civil servant, guy by the name of James Miller, who's been there for God knows how long, decades. And he's the acting commissioner. Now, nothing wrong happened under none of this bad stuff, this shortcut stuff, happened while he was acting commissioner. It happened while Bush's guy was acting commissioner. And so there's an investigation by the inspector general. It's ongoing. And while it's ongoing, Stephen Miller doesn't tell Congress that it's ongoing. But to be fair to Stephen Miller, Daryl Issa, the chairman of the committee, the House Oversight Committee, the Republican in charge, the person who's asking the questions, he also knows about the investigation, and he also doesn't tell anybody, or if he did tell anyone, we don't know. I mean, he actually said on Bloomberg News it was an open secret that they were investigating this. So everybody knows they're investigating this. Congress knows. Stephen Miller knows. It's not brought up to the public because, as Daryl Issa put it, we wanted to wait till the investigation was complete. So the investigation's complete, and now Stephen Miller, where nothing wrong happened under him, he's not even a political appointee, right? He's got to get fired by President Obama, who's got to get out front of this thing, even though he didn't report stuff that even the chairman of the House Oversight Committee knew and didn't report because an investigation was ongoing. It's this, we're going to show outrage, we're going to show America we're doing something, which I guess his political analysts told him to do. But at the same time, I think it makes it look like a big scandal when it's really a very tiny thing.
Well, it's an amazing distortion, you know, and the reality is, I mean, what I was just hearing you say, Mark, is that A, you've done your research, B, you're a good lawyer, you know, C, you believe, unfortunately, and this is the unfortunate part, that facts matter.
Yeah, I actually read the facts. I actually looked at them in detail. I'm like the only one I know that's done this in the media.
Yeah, you're a noble gentleman, but you're deeply deluded.
All right.
You know, facts do not matter, particularly when it gets into the vague complexity that we're dealing with right now. What matters is perception, and how is President Obama and the Democrats, how are they going to fight this? Well, they're going to have to, I hate to even say it, but they're going to have to play the same way the Republicans are playing. They're going to have to expose simple Republican shenanigans. That has to be their answer to every single question. Yes, it's not what I like in terms of discussion or dialogue, but this is not about a rational, legitimate problem. This is the dirty side, the ugly side of politics. And the only way you can fight this is to, in fact, attack those who are attacking you.
Terry,
I
want to take a quick break. When I come back, I want to explore how we do that. How do we play their game? How do we attack them the way that they're attacking us? I'll tell you one thing, though. For all the hype and scandal in the media, it hasn't affected Obama's approval rating very much. Latest opinion polls show between 51 and 53% of Americans approve of the job President Obama is doing as president. As I recall, 53% voted for him for president. So it really hasn't changed that much. The irony is, for all the hype in the media, hasn't moved the needle all that much. If you want to call in and join this discussion, I encourage you to do so. It's 202-889-9797, 202-889-9797, or call toll-free 888-488-MARK. We'll be right back with more of the Raucous Caucus right after this. Welcome back to the Raucous Caucus. This is Mark Levine and Terry DeKester. Are you there, sir?
Oh, you better believe it.
Okay, that's good. So we're talking about how to play the role of Republicans. Here's what it is distressing, Terry, as you pointed out, because I'm one of those, weird believers that actually government can be used to help people and that democracy is a good thing and that we should actually promote policies that make people's lives better and work on those and tell the truth to the public. And I don't know what dream world I'm living in. I'm probably waking
up
soon.
I
actually believe in all this stuff.
Me too.
And so I see that knowing the facts doesn't matter and telling the truth doesn't matter. And all that matters is that you're able to lie convincingly and do so while you secretly, you know, help yourself to as much government cash as you can.
But I see a bit of hope in this.
Really?
Yeah.
And you see hope?
Yes, I do.
You're my favorite pessimist. You see hope? What?
Sorry,
are you sure?
It's a drug problem.
I was just going to say, did you up your dosage of Prozac today? Is that what happened?
Yeah, right. It's a dosage problem. But anyway, no, but I'm seriously thinking about our discussion and thinking about, you know, what is the solution or what can be done that's positive about that, if there's anything. What it really boils down to, Mark, and this is an opportunity. Because our real problem is how our electoral system, our social system is financed and manipulated. That's the real problem. No matter what side you're on, that still is the real
problem. But it's getting worse, Terry, not better.
And yes, I know. But this is an opportunity for President Obama and the Democrats to really call out and give examples of how money is corrupting the system. To sit there calmly and say, for instance, this is not exactly tied to the 504 thing, but it's the same idea. Most people do not know, in fact, I'm sure very few people know, that so far in the last year or so, the Koch brothers have given, particularly I think it's David Koch's foundation, has given $23 million to PBS television. $23 million.
Right. But see, now the question is what the strings are.
Exactly. Of course, there's always strings.
I mean, I like PBS. What are they going to? How is he going to destroy it now?
Well, because they need $23 million. They only get about 12% now of their money from the Corporation of Public Broadcasting. The rest of it is primarily corporate financing, foundation financing. But if they started to point out, here's how many million Karl Rove got, you know, into the system. Here's how much the Koch brothers put into the system, and a lot of this money can be found out, even though it's not officially recorded. You know, there are associations that are watching this very closely and know how much money is getting into the system and from who. Once the Democrats start doing that, the Republicans, of course, will respond, well, the Democrats are doing the same thing, and they'll start naming all the Democratic donors, and we're going to get, this is an opportunity to get into the public's eye the role of money in our corrupted system.
But two things. Number one, first of all, I did read an article about that, and I also read that PBS is shelving a documentary on the Koch brothers' power.
That's right.
So the coincidence, perhaps? That,
no.
I mean, this is our public broadcasting service. You know, Fox News can be as biased as it wants. It's owned by Rupert Murdoch, you know, an Australian, not even an American. But we expect that to be biased. But PBS was supposed to be the one last neutral place we had on television. So he's buying it out. But let me tell you something about the money. This is how it always works to me. So the conservatives got a lot more money than the liberals do. There's some very rich liberals, but there are many, many more rich conservatives. They got more money than we do. They funnel a bunch of money in the system. And it seems to me that Democrats are caught in a pincer, in a catch-22. Either they don't respond, in which case, you know, they've got $23 million and we've got nothing, and that vastly beats us in the political sphere. Or a few rich liberals do respond the way you were suggesting, Terry, the George Soroses of the world give a little bit of money and so forth, and we're still outspent, say, 10 to 1. It's not as bad, but then they point out, well, both sides do it. Both sides funnel all this money into the political system. How can you complain about money in politics when both sides are doing it, not pointing out that it's 10 to 1, the conservatives do it first, and the Democrats? So we can't win if we fight them with money. They say both sides are doing it, and we don't fight them. Well, then it's even worse. I don't see a way out of this.
I disagree, because I don't think the average American likes the money issue in politics
they
at all.
Don't.
Because every one of us knows that I can put in 10 bucks, 20 bucks. If I've got a lush year, I can put in maybe a couple hundred bucks into a political issue that I think is important. Everybody knows that they are left out of the system. They don't want to admit it. They want to pretend that they're not, but they know it. And the more that this can be brought to the public's attention, the more pressure there will be and the more opportunity to make some kind of change, to make some kind of a law, you know, prohibiting corporations as, you know, having all this political power and being able to use all this money.
Terry,
you know,
even when
everybody knows what's going on,
even,
I would say lay it out there blatantly, let the world see how ugly it is on both sides. The Democrats hopefully have a goal of making a change. The Republicans don't have that goal. But if the public is really painfully aware of the fact that they haven't got a nickel into the game, then there will be enough momentum possibly to actually change something.
This is such a switch from our normal positions, because now I'm the pessimist and you're the optimist. So
yes,
while I take a while to get used to my new position here, but I'm going to give
you
a pessimistic answer, which is that even when the public gets involved, even when the state of Montana, for example, passes a law that says corporations giving money to politicians corrupts our government and we're going to prohibit it, maybe not in the United States, but at least in our little state of Montana, where they're going to prohibit it there, and Supreme Court overrules it and said, nope, you must allow corruption in your government. You must allow corporations to buy your government. So, and of course, the Supreme Court is 5-4 and largely, you know, appointed by people like George W. Bush, who was appointed by the Supreme Court, who you see how it goes. The people get no voice in this anyway. I mean, whenever I talk about any of these issues, political corruption, whenever I talk about them, people say both sides do it. And, you know, well, to some extent, they're right. Both sides do it. The Republicans do it a lot more than the Democrats. No one seems to want to follow that distinction. And the answer is, if we don't do it, if we don't play dirty, I mean, Bill Clinton was a successful president, I would argue, because he was willing sometimes to play a little bit dirty. Obama doesn't seem to be willing to ever play dirty. And so we just lose. We just lose time and time and time again. It just seems like he's always trying to compromise. Even this AP story. You know, pursuing this leak, This was a good news. This was stopping an Al-Qaeda plot. The Republicans accused him of leaking the information in order to praise what his administration had done. As if that's a crime? How dare you leak the information to tell? But Obama didn't leak it. And so he went out and he tried to pursue the leaker. And now it's like, how dare you pursue the leaker by monitoring the press? He just can't win. They define the debate so he just can't win.
Well, you know, but you're partially right there because he doesn't seem to be, It's such a difficult line to watch. I mean, I actually have more and more respect for Obama the more I watch him try to deal with the insanity that we call politics. You know, because he does, in a sense, remain a little bit, probably you can argue too much, but removed from the fray.
Yeah, he's aloof.
But that allows him to hold on to some little bit of integrity. And that allows a little bit, like the support you
say. Do people respect that integrity?
Well, he still has this high approval.
Well, that's rate. True. That's true. He does.
You know, but he did get through a somewhat of a health care plan that will have some effect. Not enough, but it will have some good effect.
But, Terry, he's not running for office again.
And he's not running for office.
So his approval rating only works if he could translate that into Democratic votes in Congress in 2014. And I think he's got to get a little down in the fray to do that. I just don't think his personal approval rating, staying aloof and avoiding the problems, helps the Democrats pursue what is, after all, Obama's agenda by electing more Democrats in Congress.
Well, the other side of his problem is he then tries to get too involved. You know, that's the other side, like he did with the gun control issue. He tries to get too involved, and he tries to deal with it on a practical, almost academic level. You know, that's not what politics is about. He can make his statements. He can say that, you know, the lack of gun control in this country, as an example, you know, is a crime in and of itself. You know, look at any other society. Look at Australia. Look at Israel. Look at their success in terms of gun control.
Yeah, Australia has done a tremendous job. I mean, truly changing that country's culture.
Yeah.
And also, gun crime is down like 95% or something dramatic like that. Maybe even stronger.
But he needs to have the sense that that's where he speaks. That's what he says. Then other people, you know, other people down the chain say, you know, the guy from the president of the NRA, you know, is an absolute fanatic. I mean, let's be honest about it. The man is a fanatic. You know, he would give a gun to your grandmother so he can shoot your grandfather, you know, just to make them both happy. You know, let them fight dirty. I know this is diabolical, but I mean, it's the way it has to work. Obama has to stay a little bit removed, even while making strong points, but the strong points can be made. And in this particular issue that we're dealing with now, there should be people out there making the comments that the whole financial, you know, investment into our politics is destroying our country. We need campaign finance reform, period. We need it. We need it. Here's why. Because the Republicans are doing it, the Democrats are doing it, and you, the people, are losing. You know,
I support that. I think it's a real, it's an uphill battle. Even when I talk with people, I think it's an uphill battle because, you know, I'll say we need public financing campaigns and like, oh, you're going to take from my taxes to public finance campaigns. And you have to explain to people they're going to lose a lot more in taxes by all the special deals that are going to all the people who are paying for our government than to pay for it ourselves. I mean, just to give an example, I'd rather spend $1 million in taxes on public financing campaigns than $1 billion because for every $1 million that XYZ Corp gives, they get $1 billion back in tax breaks. That costs more than the cost of public financing. But but I got to tell you, if you were to take a test of all the issues most facing America, you know, you've got jobs, you've got the environment, climate change, guns, immigration, abortion, gay civil rights, you name it, just all the way down the line, Syria, Iran, Al-Qaeda, whatever it is, I think public financing probably wouldn't crack 1%.
I wouldn't even use that term to begin with. I wouldn't, if I were running a campaign, I wouldn't use that
even
term.
Campaign finance reform. I'm sorry, I don't think it's going to crack. If it cracks 1%, it's not going to crack 2%, Terry. This is hardly the issue in the forefront of American people's minds.
It can be.
How?
It can be.
How?
It can be.
By marches?
By giving specific examples. By naming names, by showing, you know, you don't have to go into a lot of detail. I mean, you have to, even beginning with the fact, I guarantee you that 99% of the people who support PBS, enjoy PBS, give money into PBS, do not know that PBS is getting most of its money, or a large portion of its money, $23 million, you know, funding Nova, preventing documentaries from happening. I bet most people in PBS do not
know. So when they find out, what do? Do they give less to PBS and therefore harm what used to be and still kind of is a great American institution?
It's a difficult choice, but at least they can say, you know, geez, maybe this thing really isn't working. Maybe this system really isn't working. Maybe money is the problem. And you can just go case after case after case with that, with very specific names, with very specific amounts of money, with very specific effects, creating the reality. And again, this is part perception, but it is also the reality that money has totally taken over our democratic system. Our government is now, our democratic system is hollow. And it is because money has taken over it entirely. And the people do know that in their gut. The problem is they feel powerless. But if you started naming names, pointing fingers, not getting into the details, but naming names, pointing fingers, it'll happen on both sides.
There are groups that do that. Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington Crew is one of my favorite groups, and they name names, and they give the donations, and they spell it all out. And, 99% of people in the country have never heard of them. I'd like to suggest it's not an either or, it's a both and thing. I obviously support everything you're saying, Terry, but let me suggest.
Wow, that's a first.
Well, it is a first, but on certainly when it comes to campaign finance reform, I agree with you. But my complaint is not that it's a bad thing, but that it's relatively ineffective. And let me suggest maybe a more aggressive tack. So here's what I've been thinking, particularly with regard to the IRS scandal. I've been mulling over my mind and turning over at night and thinking about why I messed up the CNBC interview, which, by the way, if you want to watch and see how you think I messed it up, you go to marklevinetalk.com and it's right up there, and then you can comment and let me know what you think. But so first of all, they got me because they switched topics on me, and that threw me off. But even on the IRS, the question was not what are the facts of the scandal, something I'm well versed in and would love to talk about, but I think the question that was thrown to me, does this mean Eric Holder is going to be fired? Does this mean Obama is going to be impeached? You know, and I'm like, no, it's crazy talk. So here's what I think I should have said. I should have said to the people there, why are you besmirching the reputation of George W. Bush? And they'd be like, what? Why are you attacking George W. Bush? Why are you saying it's his fault? Well, we're not saying that at all. No, but here's the deal. So Bush appoints the IRS commissioner that these bad things happen under. The inspector general, appointed by George W. Bush, says that Obama has no involvement in it. And you're claiming that this kind bespectacled Republican, this very low-key guy, you're claiming he's a liar and a cheat. How can you do that? J. Russell George is an honorable person. They'd be like, we're not calling him a liar or a cheat. Sure you are. He said in his report, emphatically, conclusively, there was no political wrongdoing here, that Obama had nothing to do with it. So it's very simple. You're calling, not only are you calling J. Russell George a liar, but I want you to explain to me how it is that George W. Bush appointed into office this closet Obama mole before Obama is even president. I just want to understand how your conspiracy theory works. So Bush actually wanted to help Obama before he knew Obama was going to be president. So he pointed a guy that he knew would lie. Is that your argument? And they'd be like, Mark, you're crazy. And I'd be like, well, okay, if that's not your argument, then you accept the report as true? Is that what you're saying? So Obama really did do nothing wrong and there's nothing wrong here? You see what I've done? By attacking them personally and by pointing out that the people who said these things, that Obama did nothing wrong, happened to be Bush appointees, I've sort of changed the terms of the debate. I've aggressively gone after them. And when they say, well, we're not attacking this guy, then, oh, well, then you're saying the report's accurate and 82% of the Tea Party people were political and, it was done under a Bush appointee and Obama wasn't involved. Oh, okay. If you're saying the report's accurate, then what's the complaint?
Let me put it to you in theatrical terms.
Yeah, I mean, would that work as a matter of theater?
Yeah.
Because that's what this is.
Yeah, but, you know, what you've just described was almost too complex for me to follow.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Or, you know, unless everybody is totally up to date as you are up to date with all these issues. And this might work in a courtroom if, you know, Scalia is paying attention, but I doubt he ever does. But
so I lost people there with that one. People just think he's a Looney Tune. What's he talking about?
But imagine, and this is very difficult to do on television, but it could be done, excuse me, please, it could be done in the hearings. You're sitting there in front of the congressman, and they're asking you some nasty question, you know, and you know your career is going to change anyway, no matter what, you know, because you're sitting there before Congress, and they're going to crucify you so they can pick on Obama. You know that. So you're sitting there, and they're asking you a question about what you do in the IRS, and your response is, well, thank you, Senator, for that question, and I hope that I can be of help in understanding it. But it's only appropriate that I answer that question with a question. And can you make for us, so that I understand what's going on in our system right now and in our government, can you just give us a list right now of your top donors, you know, the ones that are private and secret? I'm serious. You know, the news media one would play it up like crazy.
Oh, my God, I like that.
Yeah, well, exactly. You know, that's what you have.
I just want to know who owns you, Senator, so I know who to respond to, because if AT&T owns you, I'll respond a certain way. But I mean, I'm going to tell the truth, but I know you want me to shade the truth to the people who own you, so I need to know who owns you, Senator.
Yeah, well, not even that, just nasty. Again, the senator would go berserk and say, answer the question. He says, well, you know, I'm trying to answer the question. So, you know, as an example, how many Tea Party organizations gave money to you?
Right.
Because that's what we were trying to find
out. Right. And if they, we were trying to find that out. So maybe you can help us answer the question. And if the Tea Party gave money to you, then they're political and then they're not appropriately getting a tax exemption.
You know, and then when Senator Schmidt, you know, gets all upset and screams and makes you say, you got to answer the question, then you say, well, Senator Schmidt, I'd like to, but, you know, I'm still not understanding exactly. So, Senator Brown, could you mind explaining how much money you got for your campaign? You know, from Tea Party organizations.
Yeah, you'd probably be held in contempt and marched off in handcuffs, but it would be great, quite a story.
It would be great theater.
Great theater.
Exactly.
That's the theater guy says. It would be great theater.
Yeah, but you see,
that only happens in Hollywood, Terry.
That politics is showbiz. That's all these guys are doing. They're grandstanding. They're performing. They're trying to look like they're the heroes to save the nation, and it's all BS, and we know it. So play it that way.
It is a fascinating thing. I mean, here it is. The heart of the question, the heart of why everyone's so angry at the IRS, is the IRS had the audacity to claim that the Tea Party actually got involved in political campaigns, which if you have watched the news for the last 5 years and you don't think the Tea Party was involved in political campaigns, then you've got a screw loose. Their goal, and that's not illegal. That's not illegal.
No.
That's the Democratic Party gets involved in political campaigns. Republican Party, Libertarian Party, Green Party. This isn't a left right issue. It's a political, non political issue. Is the Tea Party political? Yes. Next question.
Yeah.
What's the question here? So should they have been getting an exemption under 501c4? No, they're not a social welfare organization. I don't think the Tea Party believes in social welfare. They hate socialism and they hate welfare. I can't think of any organization that's less likely to provide for social welfare than a Tea Party organization. They're all about individuality, and that's their right, but they're not a social welfare organization. I don't think they're about feeding the hungry and clothing the naked.
Exactly. The people that who are witnessed, you know, are called before Congress, yes, they face some risk. There's no question about that, and it takes courage. You know, but, I mean, that courage has been exemplified even in as ugly a time as the McCarthy era. You know, there are people who have just spat in the face of Congress, and, yes, they've been held in contempt and things like that. And, you know, yes, it takes guts, but that's the only way you can battle. Can you imagine just, again, asking that senator, you know, all we were doing in the IRS is trying to figure out what is legit and what is legit. Now, with the Tea Party organizations that gave money to your campaign, Senator, what percentage of their income went to that and what percentage went to any social benefit?
Right, to social welfare.
I mean, throw the question right back at them.
Right, and the senator will be like, that's non-responsive. I said, well, you're non-responsive. I don't know the answer. You don't know the answer. And the reason why this investigation is taking so long and we still haven't determined these files for 2 years is because none of us know the answer, Senator. You don't know.
You
I don't know. They refuse to tell us.
Say, you know, that's our job is to find out, Senator, exactly the money, the organizations, you know, you can have all the money you want, Senator, but, you know, the organizations they're giving to, we have to know by law, you know, what percentage, you know, of their money is going to you and what percentage of their money is going to build a park or a hospital or something like that. We have to know that, Senator. Can you help us?
Help us determine that answer, because what we did is we decided they needed special scrutiny because we found out that a lot of their money was going to political campaigns.
Yeah, but I wouldn't even explain. You just keep asking. You just keep asking. You know, it's what politicians do anyway. You ask them a question. Do they give you an answer in response to the question? Of course
never,
not.
Never.
Play their game, you know, because it can be used. And it would make them eventually, I mean, yes, there would be some people that would, you know, frankly be martyred. I mean, that's the risk you have to take, you know. But well, somebody has to have the courage to start playing it that way.
How should Obama respond? Because Obama has responded with his own theater, and rather than deal with the substance, I'm the only one in Washington that apparently wants to deal with the substance, has read the statute, has read the code, has read the Inspector General's report, know the details of what happened. No one seems to care. I feel like I'm talking in a void here, but Obama doesn't deal with the specifics either. His role is to fire the acting commissioner, the guy that wasn't even there when it happened, that wasn't even appointed by him, just some civil servant, because that's his theater of I'm taking action. And
yeah, but that's negative. You know, that's negative action. That's negative action, because what he's saying is, well, maybe the guy's guilty.
Right.
That's what he's saying.
Right.
You know, which is that is not the defense lawyer I want on my side. I'll tell you that. You know, no. I mean, there's no reason he could say, you know, this bothers me. This bothers me. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go back on my own as President of the United States. I'm going to ask my staff. You know, there's some of them I have to get some, you know, some special staff to do this because we have so many things on the agenda that are more important. Let's face it, you know, like immigration, there are things that are more important. But I'm still going to take some of my staff, and I want them to go back to check with every campaign donor that we had. And I want them to know from everyone that was a 504 that gave any money to my campaign. And I want to know, because I believe in restoring the integrity to our system, I want to know what percentage of any 504 that gave money to my campaign was that money used, what percentage was used for political purposes, and what money was used for, you know, for legally legitimate social benefits.
Well, I don't mean to be too difficult here, but just so we get the facts right. First of all, it's 501c4. So
Thank you. Get
your code section right. And secondly, the way these organizations usually work is they don't usually make direct contributions to political campaigns. That actually is something you can monitor, because if you give more than $200, that's recorded. What they do instead is they did issue ads. They did things like, you know, Obama is Hitler. Should you vote for him? That's for you to decide, you know?
Yeah,
so they don't directly give to the Obama or the Romney campaigns, or what they do is they do these horrible, factually inaccurate ads on TV, like Swift Boat Veterans, but unlike Swift Boat Veterans, they don't actually tell you who they are, because 501c4 is anonymous. 527s, I remember we used to complain about 527s four years ago in 2008. The Swift Boat Veterans, we used to complain about them. These are worse, because what they are is the exact same thing with anonymous donations, which is not what 501c4 was about in the beginning. So well, it's even worse. That's my point.
But, you know, but the point is, you know, that somehow there Obama has to do two things. One, stand above the fray, and part of that is his own transparency, and then simply asking, okay, here's what I'm doing to find out about money in my campaign, because yes, money plays a huge power in politics, let's face it.
Sure.
I would like to ask every senator on the committee, every congressman on the committee, to do the same. To find out exactly in their campaign, in their election, where the money came from, and to make it public. I'll do that, and I hope they'll do that. You know, bring it out in the open. Expose it.
Yeah, it's so hard, though, because, again, Obama, just like his campaign, right, he can expose his donors, but people who put up ads to support him or oppose him, he doesn't know. Nobody knows. That's the problem. Nobody knows. It could be coming from the dictator of China, and we would not know. That Democrats, of course, proposed an act called the Disclose Act that would require everyone to tell their donors. Republicans voted it down because they want anonymous big donors controlling our politics.
Well, what would have happened as a, for instance, if John Kerry had said, you know, one thing I'd really like to know is, where is the money coming from for these accusations?
No, but we knew that. We knew that. It was pre-Citizens United, Terry. We actually did know who these people were.
Yeah, I know. I mean, even today, if that were your response, if that were your response to the public, and if you had a position of power, if you had a pulpit, you know, I would like to know where these ads came from.
And they'll tell you, Citizens for Prosperity and Goodness and Truth,
yes,
and Puppies.
Okay, thank you. And I would like to know, because it's only fair, because we have a democratic system, we want an open system, who is it that runs this organization and who is it that contributes to
and
it?
And they'll
why
say,
is that a problem?
No, we have a right under the Citizens United case never to tell you who we are. Go away.
That's a good question. That's a good question, Senator. You know, the point is the, was the Congress, I'm sorry, was the Supreme Court of the United States saying that money should be secret?
Yes. No,
is that in their decision that
no,
we want
no, no. Actually, what the Supreme Court decision said was they could give unlimited donations, and then they shoehorned the secretness into this, like I said, 100-year-old provision that really I have no problem with, that lets you beautify parks anonymously. They shoehorned it in there, and of course, the attempts to fix it, which is what the Disclose Act is all about, that's what the Republicans have bottled up and filibustered.
And you can even go further than that, and you can simply respond, you know, look, I don't want the government determining who spends money where. I'm not asking for that at all. But I think the government can create a law saying that you need to be open with the public on who's giving money to who.
That's what the Disclose Act is.
And the fact you have to be open.
That's what the Disclose Act is. The Republicans are filibustering it, and 99% of Americans don't know. Well, I won't say that. 90% of Americans don't know what the Disclose Act is, don't know the Republicans are preventing it, don't even know the Republicans support secret, anonymous, foreign, or whatever donors controlling our political system and our elections. They don't even know that that's a decision. Central part of the Republican platform.
Even my conservative brother-in-law now, within a very short time, understands that the problems in America are due to the corporations.
Really?
Yes.
How'd you persuade him?
Greg Palast basically did it for me.
Really?
I just gave him Greg Palast's book, you know, The
Which one?
Vultures.
The Vultures of Capitalism?
Yes. Yeah, I gave him that book. He's an intelligent guy. He read it, and he's just going, holy cow.
Well, good for you, because I have a cousin who's a conservative. I'm sorry. We all have these, you know, we all have black sheep in our family.
And we love them.
And we love them. Yes, we do. But I had a first cousin, a conservative, who was texting me, and he was crowing. He was ecstatic. He was jubilant. And so I started asking him some of the facts. You know, do you really think that we shouldn't find out who leaked, you know, about our Yemeni spy? And he's like, you know, I don't know all the facts. And I'm like, well, then why are you crowing? Because Obama's going down, baby. And it's
not about
the facts.
One other thing, because I know we're running out of time.
Yeah, we are.
I just read a very important study.
Okay.
The way to battle this, and this was done in a study that proved it, is you ask people not what they think. You ask people not what they believe in. You ask them, why do you think this?
Yeah.
Why do you think in this way? That creates a doubt, and it creates a little bit of humility, and it creates an introspection, even for a moment, and they begin to learn.
Well, I'll tell you what, when you ask people why, in my experience, and I've been on radio for 10 years now, and you for, I don't know, a century or two.
Two or three centuries. As soon as Marconi got the radio going, I was there.
Right, or the telegraph, you were, I'm not quite
there.
Sure. I know, but when I talk to people, what they do is, I just a woman on Facebook, and we can go a little over if you've got time, Terry, I don't know if you do.
I've only got a couple of minutes.
Okay, well, let me just say this. On Facebook, this woman writes, see, how can you argue, Mark, that Holder didn't perjure himself? Holder said that he didn't sign any warrant for James Rosen. And I wrote her back, no, he didn't say that. Please show me the video. Go look for it. You will find that he didn't say that. He talked about not prosecuting reporters for disclosure of information. But she believed it was true, even though this is an objectively provable fact that the guy never said the thing. And, of course, she hasn't responded to me. But it's they're taught one level of lies. And even if it's objectively provably false, I'm not going to listen to you because you're a liberal. I mean, well, I simply say, go check the video. See if he said that, because he didn't.
We don't have, unfortunately, we should probably do a whole show on it, and I can do some research and get you some of the information from the studies. But, yeah, if you ask people factual questions, what they think are facts, you know, they are going to retreat every time to the facts that they've already bought into.
Right, and my trick is to ask them for objectively verifiable stuff. In this case, she claimed Holder said something, and I said, go ahead, show me the video.
But unfortunately, that actually doesn't change people's thinking.
No.
I mean, that's a studied fact. So the question really becomes, okay, why? I mean, I have to phrase it better myself because I have to go back and look at the study. I just read this recently. It's just in a paper. In fact, I'll send you a clipping on it. It's fascinating. But the point is, you know, why why does your thought process go this particular pattern? Why does
you
it
want to believe
that
you're right? And so you'll grasp at any straws, and you don't trust, you trust your sources, you trust Fox, you don't listen to Mark Levine and We Act Radio and Terry DeKester on the Raucous Caucus every Sunday at noon like you should. And
yep.
You believe in these things that actually turn out not to be true. So let that be a lesson to you. Tune in every Sunday at noon
Absolutely.
To the Raucous Caucus. And by the way, if you miss any aspect of today's show or any other shows, you can go to my website, marklevinetalk.com, and you can download the shows and listen in your spare time. There's a podcast. Follow me on Twitter at marklevinetalk. Terry, where can they find you?
They can find me at Doctor of Democracy, Dr. of Democracy, at AOL.com.
There you go. So just email Terry. Also, I think we're both on Facebook, right, Terry?
Yep.
So there's friend me, join the fan page, spread the word, because there's very few places left that aren't controlled by the corporate media, and we are it.
Amen.
Thank you so
always
much for coming on the
Mark.
Show, Terry. I always do appreciate it. And like I said, tune in the Raucous Caucus Sunday at noon, every Sunday on We Act Radio. Coming up next, the Inside Scoop. Be right back right after this.
Thank you.